So I remember the days of me answering all the calls, returning all the emails, seeing everybody, being the admin and the practitioner. And when you're in practice by yourself, that's all you got, just yourself, right? As you're growing and you're scaling to bring other people on. And one thing that I always found so challenging was rescheduling people. And it starts to add up the more people that you have. So one thing that has saved us a ton of time recently and really increased our conversion percentages online to new patients is making the switch over to PT Everywhere for my local practice, Athletes Potential. We actually saw our new patients that were booking online numbers double in the time that we've actually implemented utilizing their platform. And the reason why, it's so much easier to book online. Many times people have to create accounts and it's difficult for them to actually save an appointment. And as we switched over, what we saw was these numbers jumped for us and we got more people online, which saved our administrative resources. It allowed them to pick a time that worked for them. And overall, it's been a very seamless transition. So if you're looking to leverage a platform to help get some of your time back, I would recommend PT Everywhere. It'll save you a ton of time on the admin side and help get more people in the door. Head over to pteverywhere.com and check out their platform and how it can help you.
So here's the question. How do physical therapists like us, who don't want to see 30 patients a day, who don't want to work home health, and have real student loans, create a career and life for ourselves that we've always dreamed about? This is the question, and this podcast is the answer. My name's Danny Matei, and welcome to the PT Entrepreneur Podcast.
What's up, guys? Dan Tay here with Eve Gigi. I just went live for about 3 minutes on my personal page, not realizing that it wasn't in the Facebook group. So we realized it, and then we bumped it over. So even I really talked about basically nothing but how nice the weather in Charleston was. And I asked him if he missed the winter, and he said very little, which I understand. It makes a lot of sense. It really is nice there. You guys have a great city, man. We actually, ironically, it would have been funny if I would have moved there because we would have been like competitors in a way.
True. I wonder if this whole relationship would have ended up, maybe would have been like mortal enemies at some point.
I don't think so. I think that what would have happened is we probably just would have become best friends and started the same shit that we're doing now. It's weird. I think it just would have ended up working out. I would have been wearing flip-flops a lot more and had a better tan.
Yep. Those are two essentials to Charleston.
Rainbow, oh, yeah.
Rainbow flip-flops. I have.
There's a look, dude. I think there's a look in every city. I noticed this, like everywhere I've lived, there's kind of like an acceptable look of what somebody looks like. In Hawaii, if you wear shoes everywhere you go, people are not into it. It's actually, they know you're not from there. And so if you call sandals instead of flip-flops or flip-flops, if you call it that, they know you're not from there either because they call them slippers. So it's like these weird little things where like, yeah, if you say, hey, can you pass me my sandals, they're like, dude, you're lame. You got to call them slippers.
I've never heard that. I think slippers are like nighttime slippers, like something you put on, with a robe.
It's true, man. I actually had a guy try to steal my slippers one time while I was surfing. He was a homeless guy. And I had my slippers up against a tree and I was surfing and I saw him do it and I paddled in and I chased him down and took him back from him in the parking lot. And he was like, oh, sorry, bro. I thought these were mine. I was like, you thought those were yours? Was that why you ran away? Like, give me my freaking flip-flops back, butthole. But anyway, back to what we're talking about today. Enough of these
rants.
Totally off-topic stories about Hawaii and Charleston. We're talking about 2020. Man, 2020 is over. I don't know. I guess in like the sense of the year being over. But we had a weird year. I would say it was a very interesting year. One that I think we will remember for the rest of our lives. Can you think of anything like super significant that happened in 2018?
No idea. Nothing as far as I know. Yeah. 2020 will forever be known. Yeah. As someone said, it's forever the year that shall not be named or something like that. And I was like, that's hilarious. Yeah, exactly. That's how I feel about it.
They're just going to know what year you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can see that. All accounts, it was a really interesting year. I mean, it's basically Groundhog's Day for us. It's the same now as it was, although my kids might be going back to school, a week on, a week off in February. So maybe we'll see. We're not banking on it. But I think we were talking earlier, like, could you imagine like your house, just being alone in your house with like, it just being quiet?
I can't even picture that now. Like, I feel like I wouldn't know. I need the background noise. I need all those things happening for my daily function. So yeah, it's going to be such a stark contrast from one to the other, and it's going to be complete readjustment. Yeah. Cause the noise level in our house, I mean, you know, with two kids, boy and girl, they're just, you know, getting after it the entire day. So it's a whole
And then we got another dog. This is how
terrible idea.
You know what?
Or a great idea.
No, it's, I think it right now, I think it's a bad idea. I've got this dog. Where is he? He's laying down right here. You wouldn't even know he's here. He doesn't hardly bark. He looks intimidating, but he's really not. He's very trainable. Then we got this puppy, because my parents got a puppy from a farm. It's not just like saying it's a farm. It's an actual farm in Augusta. So we get a sister of their dog. And this dog is like, she's just a bad little dog. Not in a bad way. She's like, she just steals stuff constantly. She does stuff she's not supposed to.
She's a puppy. That's what they're supposed to do.
Yeah. And she's funny, and they play together, but I forget how much work that is, man. Like, I feel like I'm constantly on edge looking for where's Sally and what is she trying to chew up? Cause she'll look at me. This is how I know she's doing this intentionally. She'll stare at me, and when I turn my back, she'll creep off and go steal something. Like, tell me that's not intentional.
It's like having a kid, man. I remember when we first got our dog, Bailey, same thing, puppy. We got from a farm, and same deal. It's like, you know, you have to potty train them. They pee in the middle of the night. You're up all night in the morning. And then like, there's like the terrible twos. That's kind of what you're going through now. Yeah. Like, it's interesting. It's a good, it was a good prep for having a real child, I thought.
Well, I tell you what, I think it's the best thing that ever happened to my parents. Well, best thing recently that's happened to my parents is getting this dog, man. I mean, they are just like, they're walking so much now. Yep. They're getting their steps in. They look healthier. Like, you know, my dad is like having full on conversations with this dog. Like it's a little, you know, child. And, I think it's great for him. So for many people who got COVID puppies, we fall into that. I know actually quite a few people in our mastermind that got COVID puppies. Apparently that's like a big thing. Life will get back to whatever normal was, at some point, but there's definitely elements of what happened, you know, this past year that I think are awesome, that I look forward to, continuing, on. And, what we're going to talk about today is really lessons learned, mainly on the business side, but it intertwines with the personal side, from 2020, from not just what we saw ourselves, but with all the businesses that we work with on an ongoing basis, which the power of that to me really is the amount of data that comes from that, the amount of just touch points and the pooled information that comes from that and experiences people are going through. And that's huge. It just helps us synthesize trends a lot faster. So I think that's awesome. So I'll let you kick it off, because you actually said this first one, about, you know, the development of mental resiliency. So I'll let you kind of dig into that a little bit, and then I'll go into the second one that I learned.
Yeah. I mean, this is what I've noticed, like a high level view. And I think this is interesting way, like it created in a way, a magnifying glass or an accelerator to a lot of people and or their businesses. So if they were kind of struggling, it seemed to accelerate that. And like, they kind of fell apart, right? Or the people who were kind of resilient, were doing well, had the right mindset, they absolutely skyrocketed. And that's kind of what I saw. There really wasn't an in-between, right? So it showed me personally how important this idea of mental resiliency is, right? How important of a skill, of a mindset, how it needs to be fostered. Like I definitely, I think everybody did, had some sort of freak out moment. If you said you didn't, you're lying to yourself, right? Like at some point I was like, I'm firing everybody. I'm moving to the hills and never coming out again. Like I had that moment for sure, right? And then of course I calmed down. I said, all right, like this is gonna be okay. You know, let's figure out, you know, what's going on here, and let's start working together and coming up with solutions, right? Yeah. And I realized that, you know, years of practice, reading, fostering that mindset just really, really helped me get through that and helped to make sure that that freak out moment was not too long, and that, you know, I was able to work through it and kind of hit the next step, and which we talk about all the time, like this obstacle now became an opportunity that I kind of saw as like, oh man, this sucks, but I can do all these other things now that I couldn't do before. I'm going to go do it. And that resiliency just helped me and the other people that I saw, right? It helped them a ton.
100%. And yes, I think that, if anybody is like, nah, I handled this. I was like, not there. I wouldn't change anything about, you know, the way I handled this information. That would be great. I would love to learn from whoever that is, because I think that, you know, it's just one of these things that no one has experienced in their life. I mean, think about how, like, I have masks all over my house and in my car, just because we have so many damn masks now, because we wear them all the time when we're going to the store and going to the office. And I mean, it's just part of life at this point. Right. But like, think about the mad rush to get PPE for your office whenever this first happened. You know, I don't even remember. I mean, we paid an insane amount of money for 50 masks, 50, just like, you know, paper masks, just so we could have some PPE. And luckily for us, like, we actually keep quite a bit of gloves on hand. Not PPE, but we had a bunch of Cavicide. We had recently just stocked up on it at the end of 2019, because we were basically trying to just reinvest in things that we know we're going to need from a tax planning standpoint. So we had like a good amount of Cavicide for cleaning. And I mean, the black market value of that Cavicide at the end of March was way up there. Right. Yeah. And so we could have sold it on eBay if we wanted to, but we just were fortunate that we were kind of planning for just business as usual. And we were able to, you know, have certain things in place. But I think the freak out factor, you know, for us, it's really less about us and more about the people that we support and the people that we employ. And I know for me, I take that very, seriously. You know, I sat down with Ashley and I was like, okay, this is how long we can go without paying ourselves a dollar. And before we have to legitimately look at letting somebody go, if we make zero money. And for us, we preach to our mastermind community in particular to have 3 to 6 months of cash on hand for business, for operational standpoint, for overhead in your business, including what you pay yourself. And what was interesting was, you know, getting like messages from people that were taking that advice and were working towards it and letting us know, man, I feel like I'm in a really good spot in comparison to many of their peers, because they had been planning for something, not didn't know what, but just having that in place was like such a relief in some ways. But I think the biggest thing was testing your abilities to tolerate the unknown is so hard, right? It's just because you didn't know how long is this going to go on. How long? I mean, think about us with a live event. We had a live event planned at, was it mid-April? It was, or end of April?
Mm-hmm.
We'd been planning for 6 months,
right?
You know, since, or I guess 5 months leading into that. And we didn't know what to do. What was the right thing to do? What was the wrong thing to do? We ended up going and making our live events virtual in 2020, which we really feel is the right decision. But that's hard to do. That's hard to do because we enjoy them. We know how impactful they are. And maybe, you know, I guess there's no right or wrong answer necessarily, but it's just what you think is best at the time, because you don't know retroactively, I guess you do more so. So handling that was tough. And I think, the one thing that we have delved into quite a bit, and if you look behind me, like, this is a quote, it's a Stoic quote, Marcus Aurelius. It's something I look at every single day. It's something that I've really, over the last few years, really been interested and learned more about sort of Stoic philosophy. And it's, and when you say that to people, I just don't even like to talk to people about this, because you sound like such a dick. Like, I gave my neighbor a Ryan Holiday book. He just had a son, and I gave him Stillness is the Key, which is probably a great book for him to read.
So good.
And I had like 3 minutes to explain to him Stoicism so I could give him this book. And he was like, so is it like religion? And I was like, no, I think it's just like practical advice from people that had really hard lives about how to deal with it. And he was like, oh, okay. So I'll give it a read. I don't think he's read it. Maybe he has. probably unlikely. But that philosophy that of like emotional control, of controlling what you can control and trying not to worry about the things you can't, which is so hard. In a bubble, we can say this and it's like, we sound cool, right? But in actuality, to stop yourself in a freak out moment when everything is shutting down and you don't know if you need to let your employees go and you don't know like what that means for, can you see people in person and how contagious is this and what's the mortality rate and is our kids being affected and all these other things, we just didn't know. So this is, if anything, this year, I'm not quite sure we'll see anything else in our lifetime that's going to test us the way that 2020 did, you know? And I think there's a lot of power from that that we can gain.
Yeah. I mean, that was the hardest thing for me, honestly, was the uncertainty part of it, right? Like I kind of can deal with an enemy if I know what the enemy is and I know, you know, what I need to overcome, but we kind of didn't know, right? So we were had to like constantly adapt and be agile, right? And that's why the mental resiliency side was so important, right? It wasn't necessarily that like I had to be tough or gritty or have a good work ethic. I just had to be like resilient enough to just like keep dodging and like, you know, getting punched and swinging and missing. Cause like you just named like 10 or 12 different things that we really in March and April, we had no idea, like PPE, what we needed to do as far as in person, we had to go to telehealth, we had to do digital stuff. It was just like so many things. And like, I don't know if I told you this, but like, I really did not handle it well, at least for like a solid week. And like, I had to go back to my staff and be like, I'm kind of sorry that I had like that week. You know what I mean? Let's come back together.
What did you do? Did you like throw everything off the table and
nothing like that? I just like, when I panic, I think I just want to do a lot of stuff because that's easy for me. I just do shit. So it's like, when you do this and you go do this, you call 100 people, you go. So we just did a lot of stuff, right? Which is like kind of not fair to them. I was working hard too. And then I came back and I was like, let's take a step back and think about what we're doing before we just implement a bunch of things, right? And so that, you know, I kind of had to apologize and say, like, all right, well, we're good. Like, I know I panicked, so let's just stay back. Like, we're going to be fine. And then we just kind of reeled it back and said, you know, hey, let's start building some digital stuff. What are some things that we can build that will not only help us this year, but what kind of assets can we build? And this is what we taught a lot of mastermind members. What assets can we build to help us for years to come? Don't just build random stuff that's going to help you right now, right? Don't get into the, you know, mask business because maybe it's going to be forever. I don't know, but more than likely not, right? Like build something like an asset that will last forever. So
yeah. Well, looking back at that, like, okay, let's play, you know, what do you call it? Monday morning quarterback, where we're looking back and so what did you do? What did you do well that you think, you know, you guys really implemented that was beneficial for the practice early on?
Yeah. I mean, really well, we went and we looked at our loyal customer base. And we just touched base with them. And we really didn't ask for anything. We didn't do anything. We just went back to our people and asked them how we could help and what we could do for them. And we got a lot of that back. We had a lot of people that came and bought packages beforehand and like just supported us in a time of kind of somewhat uncertainty. I would say that's number one. Number two, we realized how important the digital aspect of things were. So we took this downtime where we weren't seeing patients. We're used to seeing 40, 50 patients a week, you know, and multiple staff members. So we took that time to like rebuild and actually come up with a very, very solid strategic plan for all of our digital content. We were putting content out there, but it didn't all kind of work together. So we created this, you know, 70-20-10 framework that we teach to a lot of our mastermind members now, right? To make sure everything makes sense. And we just use that time wisely. And it wasn't really about getting patients in the door right then and there, although that did work too, thank goodness, but it was about having a strategy long-term. So yeah, those are the two things I think we did really well.
Yeah. You know, I think back with the initial like knee-jerk reactions we got from people that we work with as well. And I think what was interesting was we didn't have an opportunity to freak out maybe as much as we would have if we were in isolation. And I think it just goes to show like the power of a group of people working together on something is there's also a lot of security in that, you know, like you hear what other people are doing, you hear what's working for them, and you can quickly kind of modify that to what you're doing as well. You're also hearing the misery that other people are going through and you're doing the same thing and misery loves company and you feel a little better about that versus if you're sitting there by yourself and you're like, am I doing the right thing? Am I doing the wrong thing? And nobody really knew, but we all knew we could share information really fast and that that would be beneficial. And I think what was really cool was to hear some of the feedback from people that we work with about just how grateful they were to be able to be looped into something like that. And I feel the same way, even though we were running it. We were still able to get so much information so fast. And I think that there's something that I saw early on was a mistake was, trying to rush to create revenue somehow and forget about the people that you work with, right? So one thing I think that I would say worked really well for us was we have a good relationship with a local soccer club, and they had to fully shut down for a while as well. In fact, we were actually supposed to do some speed and agility like workshops and just strength and conditioning workshops with them over the summer with youth athletes that they have, and those obviously ended up getting canceled. But what we ended up doing was putting together a program. I think it was six or eight weeks of speed and agility that parents could have their kids do while they were, not going to soccer, right? With videos and programming, we had put it into our software that we use to do that for teams. And we just opened it up to the club and said, anybody that wants access to this, just, submit your information. We'll send it to you and we just did weekly updates. And we had one of our PTs just go live within their Facebook group for those couple weeks to kind of go over what the program looked like that week and answer any questions. And, for us, we didn't directly make any money off of that, right? Like we could have said, all right, let's bundle this thing up and let's try to sell it, right? Which we might have been able to do, but we just felt like this is we thought it this way, like this is a huge soccer club that just got totally shut down and they're in a worse spot than we are. At least we were still seeing people and had other revenue streams. So we thought, all right, well, how can we be beneficial to them as much as possible? And that we ended up with 250 or 300 people sign up for that program, which built our email list by that much, which let us give people this, program that they could have their kids do. And we built so much reciprocity with that. We have such a good relationship with this club now that I think it would be very difficult for somebody to come in and sort of uproot us with the amount of, relationships that we've developed and support that we've given them. Not to say that's the only reason that we did it, but we looked at it like, how do we help foster these long-term relationships with people that are in a tougher spot than we are? So I think that's something that we did that was really solid. One mistake that we made early on was we had this lower tier, monthly program that we basically stack on with our continuity offer, or we used to stack on with our continuity offer of people coming in to see us monthly for a visit. And so we actually went to go and sort of do a launch with that and see if we could add people that we thought would be training at home, which plenty of people were training at home, right? Mm-hmm. And so what we did was we started by sending out mobility work for people to do, just stuff they could do at home. And we had these super high off the charts, open rates on emails and people giving us great feedback and all this stuff. Right. But when we went to go move people to join this program, we actually had a decent number of people that moved over, but the retention was terrible. And the reason why is a couple things. People don't value, they don't value lower cost recurring revenue, sort of Netflix sort of charges, the same way they do higher price, higher touch point things. So your retention is always going to be worse on those, right? And you know this firsthand with Effective Fitness, and Jared knows this with Garage Gym Athlete. So in a small business, trying to play that game is really, really hard because it's basically going to take the same amount of assets for these low cost monthly recurring revenue programs as it does for us to do programming for people that are, it's more individualized and there's higher maybe touch points, but the total amount of time is basically the same, but the revenue is way better with these higher touch point programs. So we went the lower route first, realized this was a mistake, and then flipped to where we were doing individualized. And we actually moved people over from the monthly lower ticket program to more of a expensive higher touch point program from that, which ended up actually helping quite a bit. But we spent a ton of time and resources and assets on that early on. And that was a huge waste of time, but we didn't really know what was going on, right? Like we were like, all right, this is what we need to do. But lesson learned from that, hopefully that helps you guys is understand that's a whole different business model. That's hard to do. And maybe you can speak to this a little bit more with effective fitness as well in terms of churn and all that. But like, if you're in a cash practice, you're probably better off unless you have a big group of people and you have a lot of advertising money to be able to look at, well, how can I charge more to give people a higher level of service and manage less of them?
Yeah, it just shows back to the first point too, like the resiliency behind that, right? Like you could have been like, oh, this is terrible. I used up all my equity in my email list. Let me just switch and do something completely different as opposed to, oh, okay, I'm kind of on the right track. I just need to tweak this offer. I need to change things to fit kind of my audience and my business model a little bit better and then move forward with that. And now, you know, we were just talking about this earlier, like this idea of online programming, this high touch point, higher cost online programming is now something a lot of our mastermind members are doing and you're doing and successfully adding, you know, $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, even $6,000 a month in their business recurring. So it's just, you know, just being able to use, you know, again, these obstacles as opportunities just continues to be weaved in. But yes, to your point, you do not want to get into the low ticket game unless you've got a business where you think you can start adding thousands of people, you know, every single year, right? It's like, cool, I'm willing to play that game. If I can get in front of 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 10,000 people, you know, every single year, totally makes sense. But for cash practices, no, right? Like if you're selling a $20 a month program, I'd rather sell one person into a $200 a month program than 10 people, right? Than into a $20 a month program. It's just the bottom line. It's kind of our superpower is this high touch point, high level of service. It's what we've gone in on, right? Rather than the intense-based volume, high quality, low, right? Like we'd have a high quality, low volume. That's kind of who we are.
Well, it makes sense if you think about the demographic that we work with, they're time sensitive. Right, they value their time probably more than anything else. Mm-hmm. They like the sort of level of expertise that's specific to the thing that they're working on, and a blanket program doesn't really fit that as well as a customized program. It's not like it has to be like a completely different program. By the way, many variables are similar in that it's just the way it's delivered and the way that there's coaching elements to it. In particular, and what we found is, you know, and this is sort of you don't necessarily have to, you know, be or have a digital element of your business, but I think it makes sense for most businesses that we work with in particular, because if you think about this in terms of the life cycle of a client, this is actually one of the more valuable things that we learned in 2020 was that number one, recurring revenue in your business is incredibly important. So if you are just bringing people in and discharging them and you're not creating any sort of reason to have some sort of ongoing relationship with them where you're generating recurring revenue, so revenue that's getting billed and is coming in without necessarily having to go out and find it every month, that puts you in a much better place. It's one of the reasons why we could be pretty level-headed with what we were doing is because we actually had recurring revenue built into our practice because of some of the things we'd already been doing. Now, those went up significantly because we spent more time on those and they've stayed there as we've built our patient volume back up. In fact, December, this is the best December we've ever had was this December. Like basically $10,000 more than last December. So to put that into perspective. Awesome. And a lot of that has to do is because we've added these additional revenue streams that we didn't have before because we were forced to. And then we realized how awesome they were and how important it was to build into the business model. And now they're there and they're a part of the actual machine. So if you think about this, if somebody comes in and they're hurt, right? Mm-hmm. Like let's say they have back pain. So all right, they have back pain. They come and see you. Let's say they see you six times to resolve this back pain. You start doing some low-level programming for them as part of their homework to get them working on the right accessory work they need to build strength and mobility, whatever it might be, or whatever your skill set. We're very movement based, right? So we do a lot of this. Many of you probably are as well. So for them, there's sort of two tracks that we see. It's, you know, they really love the coaching and the in-person side, and they want to kind of come back in once a month to do that and have an accountability partner for their health and wellness. We look at it like quarterbacking their health and wellness. We have a bolus of people that want to do that. Some people, they just really like having this individualized program. And we start digging into what people are doing. It's shocking to me. Like, you know, I remember a guy I'm working with, or was working with, now that I'm not seeing patients anymore. I think you're done with clients as well, right?
I am. I think I've got like one more doc to come see me half an hour, like once a quarter. I think he's the last one hanging on, but yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Interesting transition I've made this end, you know, Q4 was the goal.
It's weird. Yeah. I'm still not 100% comfortable with it, but I kind of don't have a choice with some of the other things that are going on in terms of just being time poor. But the December 29th was my last patient day. Here's what I had that day. Check this out. This is how I went out. This is the day to go out. So I actually had two people that rescheduled with another provider. I was supposed to have five people. So I ended up with just three people in the morning. And the first kid, I call him a kid, but he's an adult. He's a Army helicopter pilot from Fort Rucker, came in that I was seeing for some lower extremity stuff he had going on from just flying with his hips. Because when you're flying a helicopter, you're actually using your feet for pedals as well as basically like a joystick. And it's a super weird position. But imagine like your hip flexors constantly being on because you're having to use it. Not like a gas pedal, you're kind of pulling up and pushing down at the same time. So your hip flexors, especially if you're tall and you have a longer leg, they can get crushed. So this is the way this guy is built. So anyway, I see this guy in the morning at 6 a.m., a military guy. The next guy is a competitive jujitsu player. He's 51 years old. He's a blue belt. His goal is to get his black belt, but started like 2 years ago, like in his late 40s, right? So this guy has also been doing programming with us. And when we did programming with him, it was basically, what are you doing for a workout? And he told me the same stuff I was doing when I played football in college, which is bench press, squat, deadlift, and do a bunch of curls, right? And which is fine for powerlifting and maybe for football, I guess in some ways, but not jujitsu, which is like very unilateral, a lot of anti-rotational strength. He's doing none of that, right? So I basically have to convince him. I'm like, dude, give me 2 months of doing this. And I promise you're going to feel better. And now he's addicted for life because he's finally following something that's specific to his training. So he comes in once a month to work with us as well as follow a program. And the last person I saw, this lady is super interesting. I'm not going to obviously say her name or anything because of HIPAA, but she's a lady that found out she was very strong by going to a CrossFit gym with her boyfriend at the time. She'd never done a CrossFit workout before. She never really worked out. She played the flute. She was like in the band. And the day she went, the workout was the CrossFit total. So it was deadlift, back squat, and overhead press. Mm-hmm. And she got like third highest in the whole gym, male or female. And the owner came up to her and was like, "You're incredibly strong. Like, what are you doing?" And she's a math teacher, high school math teacher. And she's like, "Nothing. I don't know. Is this good?" Right?
That's just who I am.
2 years later, she wins world championships in powerlifting and has won three times now. And she's 50. And so she's only been training now for like 7 or 8 years. So anyway, she's the person I went out on. And for her, she falls in the category of wanting to come in on a monthly basis because she enjoys the coaching element. She enjoys, you know, soft tissue work. There's things that she enjoys that she doesn't want. She doesn't want us to do programming. She has a coach for that. So I'm not going to talk to her about programming, right? So understanding where people fall within that is going to really help increase the likelihood that they're going to do continuity-based work with you. Because like the first kid, I'm not necessarily doing anything with him. He's bouncing all over the place. Second guy's perfect for it. The third person's great for in-person work, but not necessarily programming. So having that recurring revenue, these visits, as well as the online side, that's so stable for your business, you know? And it's hard. It's hard to describe the difference that recurring revenue makes from a decision-making standpoint for hiring as well as peace of mind is just, it's so great. Like I said, it's the best dollar you can make. And it's great to have those pops of revenue from new patients and packages. But man, like if you can get your overhead taken care of with recurring revenue and have these other things that are on top of it, it's a really, really lower stress variation of running a business than just eating what you kill the whole time.
Yeah, it just gets frustrating, right? Like in the beginning, all you're thinking about is new patients. Like I just need to get them in. Eventually, you just start thinking about, all right, how do I sell packages effectively? And then you're just like, man, I'm getting all these new patients. I'm selling packages, but I've got to do this. Am I going to do this every month, every year, like forever? And it's like, no, there's got to be an end in sight, or just some sort of stability here. And yeah, that's how continuities were kind of built. I mean, I think you shared the same story. It's like continuities were kind of born for us early on because people almost asked us like, hey, yeah, like I want to come keep seeing you. How would I do this? We're like, well, I guess we could, you know, see you once a month or once a week for some people, like, and we can just do this on a recurring basis. Like, oh, that sounds great. And then you realize, right, you just instantly see like, oh man, I should be doing this consistently. Because for me, it was, because I used to be, I'm not as much anymore, much more risk averse. And when I had all these people in my continuity program, it was so much easier for me to get another provider too, because yeah, I knew I was having the, like I had a certain set of patients that I knew were going to come see me. I could guarantee that level of income, which at least, you know, gave me some overhead, gave me some salary. And then, you know, I kind of had faith that I could get some other new patients in the door. So definitely a big step. If you're looking to get a provider, you've got to have those continuity programs in place, or at least makes it significantly easier.
And if it wasn't for, you know, being essentially forced to be more remote with people. And this is actually, I stand by this. Early on, I told people, I said, I don't think telehealth is the answer. Like, I mean, I think it's a component piece of your business, but the reality is you just don't know what else to do. And so, I mean, telehealth can be great from a standpoint of, you know, remote work with people that can't come in. But one big thing that I learned this year was people don't have to be in person to, you know, to get outcomes with you, which, you know, and look, I, you know, when I first started with Mobility Wad, we were doing telehealth stuff, you know, 2000, when the hell did I get out? I guess it was 2013 when I started with them. We would just take people to do mobility consults with and assess them online and then build a program out for them. So yeah, I mean, it works, but you can definitely get results for people remotely, but people that really enjoy an in-person experience and, you know, are willing to, as long as you create a safe environment for them to come in and they want that interaction. They want to leave their house. Like they want to go somewhere else and talk to another adult. And it's been a little bit weird for us because, you know, we're not like high-fiving people and making them a latte and all, like we have such a great space that we've created this sort of area where people, you know, it feels like not just like a rehab facility or whatever, right? And like, we can't do some of these things that we want. Our customer experience has changed somewhat, but even with that, people still are going to want that in-person element. There's going to be people that want the virtual element too as well. And for us, what we've seen is, you know, our staff, at least our staff skill set really prefers, if the virtual side is going to be there, it's going to be more for solving long-term problems. And if we're dealing with something short-term, we prefer to be able to build rapport and do hands-on things in person with them if possible. So not to say that the in-person side's going to go away or that digital is the only way. I think you can do either variation that you want, but there's definitely something special about in-person experience with the way that we run practices where people are getting the support and the help that they want. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that most of the healthcare system is just really bad. Like, it's a way people feel like their time is being wasted. They feel like they can't get answers from a professional. And if you can just do those two things where you're on time every time and you do what you say you're going to do, you're probably going to at least be able to build a schedule that's somewhat full yourself with no other skills whatsoever. But that's also a hard thing to do too, because it's consistently easy to drop the ball on those things, you know?
Yeah. I think a testament to like wanting to be in person, like you kind of said it, like you have to get out of the house. I think everybody, almost every human, probably rare cases not, like even me who's naturally an introvert, I still want to get out of the house. I still want to kind of go to a restaurant. Like it's still been pretty tough for me, right, to not be able to kind of leave and be social, right? So I do think, you know, us as human beings, and we can get into that discussion too, just need that in-person social interaction, whatever that means. Like digital is great, right? Like we're obviously, our team, you know, all three of us, me and Jared are remote, and we, you know, we don't get to interact in person, and we can build a business and definitely can build relationships that way, but it's still different, right? We still crave that in-person stuff, and 100%, I still think it's our superpower. Our superpower as performance-based cash physical therapists is the intimacy, if you will, of our relationships with our referral sources and with our patients. That's our biggest difference maker. That's what makes us different from hospitals, milk clinics, all the other stuff is just the intimate relationships that we have with our patients and how we value them and their time is totally different than you can get anywhere else. Like, and telehealth can be done in that regard. I think there's probably a way, but it's also just completely different. Like, that's a totally different conversation. Like, it's not going to replace it, put it that way. It's just different.
Yeah. And, you know, to your point, I remember, you know, when you came down the first time to work with me in Atlanta and we were eating lunch and, you know, you were like, man, you seem to just like talk to people about shit that they're not here for quite a bit. And, but I remember thinking, I was like, I guess you're right. And as we started to hire other people on and take a step back and think about, well, what made this work to begin with? You know, I think for our own ego sake, we want to think it's because we have this like ninja skill set, but the reality is I don't think I'm a great physical therapist. In fact, if you were to ask me a question about research, I probably wouldn't be able to answer it. You know, I don't remember all the origins and insertions of everything. Like, I forget what, like, I don't know, the mechanics are of everything. Like, look, I'm trying to even think of things that I can't even remember the stuff that I've forgotten, right?
Slide and like, yeah, retrovert, like, you know, whatever. There's a thousand things.
Dude, I don't know any of this stuff. And for the last 3 years, I've almost exclusively gotten CEUs just to keep my license and not gone to any sort of like, you know, training to try to improve my clinical skill set because I'm so busy running the business, right? And, but yet we're still able to get outcomes. So why is that? Well, it's because of the ability to communicate and the communication side and understanding that like the guy that I saw on my last day, we spent 30 minutes talking about the green egg and how his prime rib went for Christmas and how my prime rib went and what rubs he's using. And like 30 minutes in, I'm like, well, I guess we should work on some stuff, huh? And he was like, yeah, sure. He's like, my hips gave him a little tight. And he's like, so, but half the time that he was there, we're literally talking about smoking meat. And like, that is not, has nothing to do with physical therapy at all, but it's an interest. It's what he's interested in. And it's also an opportunity for us to, you know, build rapport and trust, because for me to tell him to do these things or to work with this coach that lives in Washington State that I think can help change his training for the better, there needs to be a trust element there that if you just jump straight into it, I've just found if you jump straight into what's going on with somebody, it just doesn't work as well. Like, you just don't develop as much trust and long-term benefit with that client because you're just making it about their shoulder or their knee or whatever, not about that person or about how their life is going and their kids and what, you know, like there's so many things I get into with clients. It's the thing that honestly, I think I'm going to miss the most is not, if I could just show up and chill with people and drink a cup of coffee and just see how their life was going, then I would totally do it. I don't care if they pay me or not. Like I enjoy the interaction. And it just seemed like the formality was I had to do something with them, you know, for their body, but that's what they value. They like that side of it. And that's the best part personally, I think of the profession too, is, or the way that we set these up is you get a chance to actually learn about somebody else, you know, for them to be able to talk to you about their life and things that are going on, which, you know, there's a lot of value to that. If you just look at this, you know, psychology community, the therapist community, you're literally just talking. That's it. And so now we can like help you squat better and stick a couple needles in your butt cheek and talk to you. Like, I think it's incredibly valuable if you in comparison, right? So I don't know. I think that's a huge element of it. And you pointed out to me originally, and that was something that we constructed with the systems of how we bring people on and teach them, dude, chill on the fucking rehab side for a second. See how this person's going for at least 10 minutes. Then you can dig into everything else.
Yeah. And you know, some of the science is starting to support that stuff, right? And I mean, the bottom line is, I really feel like this is true. Like, I'm sure spending 30 minutes talking about a green egg, like, okay, is that like...
Maybe excessive.
Maybe excessive. But at the same time, who are we to judge how this person who's spending money with us, wants to spend that time? Like, who are we to judge what is deemed healthy for them? Like, that's maybe exactly what that person needed that day in order to like feel better, right? Yeah. And so like, I'm not going to go down the whole pain science kind of loop, or like, but I will say that like developing, and this is definitely something that most of us can relate to, the therapeutic alliance with our patients is one of the cornerstones of having good outcomes with people. All we're doing it is putting a much bigger piece of the pie, right? Yeah. And we're realizing that it can get really, really good outcomes, right? The cool thing is the body does a great job of kind of regulating and healing itself, right? And so we're just trying to build this trust. And just, again, the whole quarterback for your health thing is huge, you know?
Great point.
Yeah.
Well, think about this. Sometimes I wonder too, not to go off on the clinical tangent, but you know, half the time I feel like if somebody can leave my office and they are in a good mood and they feel better, like they had an hour where, yeah, I mean, some of the stuff we do doesn't feel great, you know, like, and I have no clue what's going on with this half the shit, right? Who knows? Like, research is so,
none of us do. We're all guessing. Let's be honest, right? Research, medical research. Like, we don't, if we understood it, it would be solved. We wouldn't have a job anymore.
Yeah. I told Ashley one time, I was like, I feel like if I could talk to people and like, this sounds weird, but like from just a manual therapy, like we, you know, maybe we are making these whatever physical changes or whatever. I'm sure something is happening, but like, I feel like if I could just have somebody lay down on a table and I could like scratch their back and they could tell me all the shit that was wrong with them, and they left that day and they felt better, they would keep coming back. And that would be super weird and awkward. I get it. But to my point is, there's power in human touch, whether it's scratching somebody's back or mobilizing their hip capsule, but there's even more power in listening to that person and having a conversation with that person and getting that person to laugh, you know, about some stuff that's going on that's really frustrating them. And if you can give them enough time, like, and stop them from doing stupid shit, which is typically half the battle. If we just stop you from doing stupid shit, we give you enough time and you have enough, you know, belief in the fact that you're doing the right stuff to make yourself better, then we're going to win most of the time, because the body is in constantly healing if given the right factors. And some of this is like, I think we get more benefit, honestly. Like, we always talk about sleep. We talk about sleep. We talk about stress management. We talk about not eating like a dumbass. And we talk about moving more regularly, non-exercise-based movement, moving more regularly, just walking more, you know, just breathing, you know, more, do some intentional breathing. Simple, simple things that if given enough time, lead to people feeling, you know, significantly better. So, you know, I think that a lot of it really, if you look at your clinical practice and you're matching up a business along with this, you have to understand not just what the research says, because this is where people get into trouble. And I've worked with people that are some clinical ninjas. Like, if someone was super wrong with me, I would go see them, but they have a hard time keeping their schedule busy. And it's because they do a bad job of relating to other people and understanding why they're there and understanding that person in their life. And that makes a big difference in how long they stick around, which gives you a better business. So if you don't really care on that side, but you want to have a successful business, you might want to take some, you know, some advice on the side of like, not just what does the RCT say, but, you know, what does that person have to say, and start asking them some questions about what's going on in their life, because that's going to get them to come back.
Yeah. Yeah. The people that do this really well can combine all those things together, right? Those are the people that we see are the most successful, because we obviously focus a ton on the communication and business skills. And yes, it'll help you with your business, but like, you know, kind of the point of this conversation is like, it's also going to help you clinically, which is so cool to see, to be able to get those, good outcomes, plus your business is healthier, plus you feel better, right? Like, that flywheel starts moving in a positive direction. You know, we looked at our like mission and like vision statement. I'm really, really, I can go nerd on this all over the place, but our big things are like, my big things are education and empowerment, because I truly think that's the only thing that we can actually do, right? Like, as far as like healing somebody and manual therapy, like, we're never gonna, maybe not never, but like, it's gonna take a long time to figure out exactly what's going on and why people get better and how to heal them. But I damn sure can educate people, and I damn sure can make people feel better. I can do those things. I am 100% positive of that yeah. Those things I have control over. The other things, it's a little bit more sketchy, right? And also, we get a bunch of you know, most PTs come with those skills. So like, I want you to focus on communicating better and educating your patients and empowering them and making them feel good. Like you said, giving them an amazing experience. You know, Hannah, who came and chatted with you, who we hired during the pandemic, like it's cool to see her because she's spending more time in evals, even more so than me, in the room, just talking about this stuff. Like, she's like, I didn't even bring this person out to the gym today. And I'm like, what? Like, even me, I was like, no, I at least bring them out to the gym and move a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, I've got to do some of that. And she just has found a lot of value in that. And the cool thing is she's been along for the journey, like through her entire student career, and then just able to implement this stuff immediately. And it's just working really well.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not like her lack of clinical experience, not skills, experience doesn't seem to be affecting it this much, especially when you get into this most people we're seeing, which is non-traumatic kind of injuries, right? We're talking, not talking strokes here, not talking ACL rehab, post-op stuff. This is mainly non-traumatic lifestyle kind of stuff that's going on.
Yeah. And I think you bring up a good point, right? Yeah. This isn't, somebody didn't have like a, you know, a TBI or something like that. And that's very different. I mean, in some ways, I mean, there's still elements of this that are important, right? It's funny, man. Like, you get people that come in and they can be like Eeyores of people. Like, they're negative. And everybody knows people like this. You cannot be like that and have a business like this, because if you are, you're going to bring everybody down to your negative level, you know? And I don't know the science behind all this stuff. All I know is I know people that make me feel worse when I'm around them, and I know people that make me feel better. And if you can, and you can work on this, by the way, you 100% can work on this. And one of the best things you can do, number one, never complain to somebody that comes in your office about some shit you're dealing with, unless it's funny and it relates to them in some way, right? Unless it's like, oh, you ride your bike, you fell off your bike, I fell off my bike too. You're like, whatever. Okay, that's shit. That sucks. But like, they don't want to hear about you getting stuck in traffic. They get stuck in traffic. They got their own shit they're dealing with. They want to come in there and they want to feel better. They want to have their, like, it all comes down to like, if that person has more energy when they leave than when they came in, you did your job right. And if you're bringing them down, it's going to be really hard because they're not going to feel good about wanting to come back and work with you. And if you can, like what Hannah is doing, for instance, and Hannah's sharp, right? Like, she spent a day with us. She's super smart, but you come out of school and it's not like you're super competent in your skill set or really honestly that great of a clinician until you get some reps under your belt. Everybody needs some time to really develop pattern recognition and really learn some of these things that take some time. But what if you can have the personality side of it that you're working on, that you can totally build in school. Some people naturally have this, but it can definitely be cultivated, where you care about other people, you're empathetic, you're asking questions, you're interested in their life, and you're interested in learning more about what they're interested in. Like, that is such a compelling reason to get them to come back, and they will give you the benefit of the doubt, even if you are not, you know, a clinical ninja, because they know that at least you are honest and you care about them. And that's a rare thing in the medical field, because the vast majority of people that go see a clinician of any sort, they're seen late. They're seen with multiple other people. If it's in the PT community, if it's in the medical community, they're usually sitting in a room by themselves for 30 minutes longer, if they're lucky, than what their appointment time was supposed to be, you know, and they feel isolated and they feel detached. And we don't do that. We get a chance to actually talk to them and build, you know, some of this. And I think as we bring this full circle in terms of this year, what was sort of hard, I feel like every time we talk, this never ends up where we want it to go.
It ties in though. It does.
It does. I'm going to make this full circle. Here it comes. So, but for us, what we found is, you know, the return of people coming back in the clinic, once they felt like it wasn't, super sketchy, they were so excited to come back in. They were so excited to see how things were going. They're so excited to learn about, you know, what we've been doing, what they've been doing, and that human element is going nowhere. So if you look, are robots going to replace us? Like, if you start looking at like long-term, is your job going to, if you drive a truck, maybe a robot replaces you, you know, in not too long. But if you talk to people and you engage with them, you're going to be pretty good. Because I think that's just such a difficult thing to do, and such an important thing that people just don't get in the medical field too much. And it's what's going to set your business apart. And you slap on some repeatable business skills with that, and all of a sudden you're off to the races.
I think you tied that up very well. Nice work.
Yeah. And if you drive a truck, I'm sorry to break the news to you.
You're probably not in the group if you're driving a truck. But that's
probably not. Why are you in this group if you drive a truck? I don't understand. Why are you listening to this podcast? So, all right. Well, I think it's good to end it on that one. Any parting words at all, Eve, on this one?
No, I mean, I wrote these three things down. I think they're worth mentioning again. The three lessons I've learned is the importance of mental resiliency and really focusing on the things you can control, using your obstacles as opportunities. Number two is just the value of in-person work, right? And in-person means just like one-on-one. It could be in a Zoom, but yes, I do mean so more like in-person in the physical world. And then number three is just to use your time wisely. Like we have this huge abundance of time, right? And just to make sure that when you've got this time, the people that used it wisely, which wisely could mean actually resting and not doing anything and taking a break, you know, wisely could mean for a lot of us, it was like working on some of our systems or a digital business that we usually don't work on, but just using your time wisely. Those were my big three.
Yeah. I would leave you guys with this as well. We saw many people start successful businesses during a year where everybody was freaking out. I think it just goes to show you the power of providing a really solid service and how many people out there are actually, frankly, messed up. Like they're just hurt. Like they're in pain all the time. They're frustrated by the medical system, which is confusing. You know, for us, we look at it and it's like, well, we can kind of make sense of it. But, you know, think about like a family member or a friend that is in a completely different profession. And they start looking at these websites and these letters behind their names, and they don't know what any of this stuff is, right? All they know is their back hurts and they want some help. So, you know, if this is a path that you're going and you've started, then congratulations. I think 2021, you know, we're already seeing it. The vaccine is getting, you know, administered. We have a handful of people even within our own mastermind group that have already, you know, gotten vaccinated. My family, many of them have because they're direct healthcare workers. Like it's happening. Things are going to be slowly returning to normal. If you've been on the sidelines because you've been sketched out, I think you're going to see a lot of people rush back to some of the things that they haven't been able to do, you know, over the course of the next, honestly, probably 1 to 2 years. So what a better time than ever to really get into what you're trying to do. And many of you probably had this pause that occurred where you had time to think about whether you actually like what you do or you don't. And this is where we saw a lot of people actually start businesses because they got furloughed and they thought they had a safe job. And then all of a sudden they didn't have a job. And so they had to try to figure out how to do something. They started a side hustle. They realized how much more they liked it. And now they want to make a go at making it their full-time business. That is actually a vast majority of what we saw this year, which is super cool to see. And if it takes a pandemic for you to realize that you just want to waste away at this job you kind of don't hate, but you kind of don't like, then I think that's a positive thing, you know, because you're at least going to start moving towards a thing that you feel like you could do the rest of your life. I mean, that's the biggest thing. So if you're on the sideline and you're thinking, man, is it safe? Is it safe to get in the game? You know, like, it's been safe to get in the game. It never went away. In fact, I think a lot of people missed out on many opportunities, you know, by waiting in many cases, but it's still there. And there's still so many people that we can help. The pie is huge. You know, we just don't even realize how many people there are. So if you're on the fence, you know, and you're looking to actually get started, or you have a practice and you want to be able to really build it up this year, you know, we'd love to be able to support you on that. You know, if you guys are listening to this on the podcast, head to physicaltherapybiz.com. You can learn more about what we do. You know, super, super easy. Plenty of resources there to help you out, give you a better idea of what your next steps are. If you're in this group and you're looking to actually get some support in your business, just type in me in the comments. We'll have somebody on our staff reach out to you and see where you're at. And if it doesn't warrant a conversation, or maybe you're not appropriate to do some of these other things that are more formal with us, we have plenty of resources that are great ways to kind of help you out that are free that we can match you up with and help you take that next step, wherever that might be. So as always, guys, thanks for being a part of the group. Thanks for listening to the podcast. And we will not have a live stream next week. We're not going to be able to do it next week, but the week after that, we'll be right back on. So we'll see you guys in 2 weeks. Hey, real quick before you go, I just want to say thank you so much for listening to this podcast. And I would love it if you got involved in the conversation. So this is a one-way channel. I'd love to hear back from you. I'd love to get you into the group that we have formed on Facebook. Our PT Entrepreneurs Facebook group has about 4,000 clinicians in there that are literally changing the face of our profession. I'd love for you to join the conversation, get connected with other clinicians all over the country. I do live trainings in there with Eve Gigi every single week, and we share resources that we don't share anywhere else outside of that group. So if you're serious about being a PT entrepreneur, a clinical rainmaker, head to that group, get signed up, go to facebook.com/groups/PT Entrepreneur, or go to Facebook and just search for PT Entrepreneur, and we're going to be the only group that pops up under that name.